Podcasting from a secret location under the mats. This is the Lessons from the Dojang Podcast, a podcast that literally has nothing to do with martial arts, but instead, we discuss the biggest news stories of the week. Kind of makes you wonder how we came up with the name, doesn't it? Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and attorney Frank Natal.
Me on the audio podcast.
Doing wonderful, Master Patsy, and it's so awesome to have Dr. Diane join us this week. Dr. Di, thanks for being a part of this.
I'm honored to be on this podcast. I've been looking forward to it. I can't wait to dig in to all of the crazy events that have happened in the past week.
It's hard to believe that it's only Wednesday. You know that? It really is, right? Whenever you talk about the drama that has happened over the last couple of days, and the last I checked, I don't know that we, like I said, we are recording this on Wednesday, and as far as I know, AG Barr is still in front of the congressional committee. I don't know that for a fact, but local time, it would seem like he's still there. Let's talk about yesterday. Let's talk about some of the things that happened yesterday, because this in a real way was a very big deal. As Frank and I were talking a little bit during the day about what happened yesterday during Barr's testimony, it appeared to both of us, and I'm gonna let Frank take the lead on this a little bit, because he is the attorney after all, that there's going to be an upcoming legal fight to get not only Mueller's report, but we can also even get into the president's taxes and things like that. But Frank, it appears to me that there's going to be an upcoming legal fight, and it almost felt like that's what they're going for. That's exactly what Barr and Trump and all these guys want. And if it is true that that's what they want, and I'm telling you, it feels that way, it seems to me that that's part of this cover up that they're trying to give us all. What do you think?
You know, I think it's definitely part of the playbook. And I think about a couple of things in relation to that. Your setup is spot on, Master Patsy. I think that you know, what is there really to wait on or deliberate about in terms of releasing something from this report? We've talked about it now for a couple of weeks in our podcast, and you know, we identified what has been identified by Barr and the congressional people who are requesting the report as items that should be, you know, redacted. And there are three very clear-cut items, and then there's one that kind of leaves some discretion. Because we're a little pressed for time today, I'm not going to go back into those. You can go back and listen to our podcast from a couple weeks ago, and we outlined those very specifically. But everybody knows the grand jury testimony is something. The grand jury, you know, items are going to be redacted. So really, there's not a whole lot to argue about here. You can release this report with those things redacted and the other two items redacted, and then they can fight over the rest of it. But he's delaying, and this is something that anecdotally, I think it's all part of their playbook. It's part of the, you know, in my mind, sinister playbook that's utilized by insurance companies. One of your favorite loves, Patsy. You know all the insurance companies, don't you? You just love the insurance industry. I know this, right? But the insurance industry has long held the practice of deny, deny, delay, delay. And the longer you do that, the more you get away with, you know, keeping your money, your equity. In this case, they're just keeping their equity, which is their political goodwill in this country with their base, their political goodwill with maybe the people who aren't paying close attention. So the longer they deny and delay, deny access to this report, delay access to the report, and create smoke screens, create reasons to argue and fight about it in court, the longer it becomes, the harder it becomes to make a legitimate issue out of any wrongdoing, because people start to get bored, people start to lose focus, they go on to other items. it gives a chance to form the narrative around what might be in the report that could be damaging. It gives a chance to maybe hide certain things, cover them up while they're arguing about what they're going to release. And by the way, just on a side note, I think they're doing the same thing with Trump's taxes. Who knows if you'll ever get to see those. And if you do, are they really going to be his taxes? Like, do you really trust that they couldn't just be in some back room redoctoring his tax returns and then releasing what is to be like, oh, this is his tax return. And who would ever know? Who would ever know that that's the truth or not? You know? So in my mind, it's all part of the same playbook. And there's really, you know, that's their goal. Their end game is we can delay and delay and delay until we're forced to not delay anymore. And then we can form our narrative in the meantime. They know what they're doing. They've been planning it this way from day one.
Yeah, it seems that way. I should let everybody know, for whatever reason, we lost Dr. Bowser. We're trying real hard to get her back. But until then, Frank, I you and I will keep going.
Okay.
I completely agree with you. It seems to me, and you can almost tell by AG Barr's demeanor, right, that he's just going with a playbook. This is because there was no emotional anything. Even whenever he started talking about, and I can't remember if it was today or yesterday, whenever he was talking about healthcare, he's just completely monotone and just going through the motions, it seems almost. And whenever it seemed to me that he was talking about, like I said, I'm sorry, Frank, I'm trying to get
on that thought real quick while you're trying. I know you're trying to get Dr. Dye back. So
let me try to get Dye back
on that. And you know, the one thing about Barr is, regardless of what I believe about his personal integrity or anything like that, you know, he's a well-trained attorney and he's been down this road before. Okay.
Yeah.
He's been in politics for a long, long time. He's been involved in very questionable decisions by other politicians in the history. If you look back at his history in political administrations, he's not a stranger to any of this. And I'll tell you that when you are and you're in front of a judge and things get heated, if you can keep your cool, you're going to win points and score points with the judges. If you, if you're going to get frustrated and react to your opponent, if you react because somebody's lying to you on the stand or not giving you the kind of answer you want and you get frustrated, it's the same thing as like in martial arts. If you get somebody off their game, you can beat them easier. Well, Barr is well-trained at this process. He knows that if he lets those Congress people get him riled up, it's gonna make for a bad scene for him. And who are the judges? They are those Congress people, and they are the American public. When they rewatch this testimony, he's going to lose points. But if he can stay calm and cool, regardless of what his answers actually are, he's going to win PR points. And you know, he's very smart. He's very astute at that particular game, so to speak. So, you know, I think that contrast that real quickly with Mnuchin yesterday. You know, two separate things going on, but Mnuchin's fighting over, well, he doesn't show like he's fighting over the tax returns. He says we're going to comply with the law, but he doesn't say what that means in his interpretation. However, he got very testy and looked really bad doing it. He's not a trained lawyer. He's not a trained, I don't know what he's trained to do. He's a movie mogul is what he is, mm-hmm. from Hollywood. That would be draining the swamp by appointing him. But you contrast him with Barr. Barr knows the game. So anyway, that's my piece on that. And I think we've gotten rejoined, haven't we?
Yeah. Dyer, are you back with us now?
I am indeed. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah. We're looks to me like we're good. I'm curious as to your thoughts about the testimony that AG Barr gave yesterday. Frank really went into detail about how it just feels like he's scripted, and he's following a playbook. And I would really like to hear your thoughts and your views on what you saw yesterday, and even, you know, part of today.
So I see two things. I concur with Frank. I think he's very scripted and careful because he is a trained attorney. And I think I sense an arrogance, right? An utter contempt for this entire scenario and process, right? And I think the arrogance will be their downfall ultimately. I'm just reminded, again, this comparison comes up all the time. Maybe you've discussed it here before, but the whole Roy Khan thing, like he is covering up as much as he can for Trump in the interim. The redactions are likely to be extensive, right? We don't know for sure, but it sure seems like that right now.
Yes.
And I think he's trading his integrity for whatever this cover up is about. Right. Well, and with Mnuchin, it's kind of the same thing. There's a certain arrogance that they're above the law. And I think that's going to come back in myriad ways because other jurisdictions, and Frank, I would love to hear your opinion on this, but the Southern District of New York, you know, New York state taxes, like other things will be accessible to Congress if they fail to comply. And there are other routes by which some of these things can be exposed. So they're like making enemies in the process with that arrogance.
Frank?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's, you know, there's enough of a breadcrumb trail in all different kind of places. And you're right. I said a long time ago that my mentor in the law said you can do a lot of things, you know, but if you remain humble and you don't become arrogant, people will let you get away with a lot of things, so to speak. And that's the downfall always is this arrogance. And I agree with you. I think that's a great point. They make so many enemies that eventually it catches up with them, you know, definitely.
You know, the one thing that I've noticed, and there's two things I want to touch on. I'm going to kind of make a fork in the road here, and I apologize for it, but two things really need to be addressed. The first one is, you know, it strikes me as almost ironic, and both of you know I'm a big fan of irony, right? I really am. I totally enjoy irony. That this is the AG Barr is the same guy that was involved in the Iran-Contra thing back whenever President Reagan was well, let's face it, he was selling arms that he shouldn't have been selling, and everybody got a clean slate off out of that, right? It was just it was malt, and now you have a president who is in an even worse position. And again, you have Barr stepping in as the attorney general, and he's going to make everything Malcolm Nance, and I say coincidence takes a whole lot of planning, right? That right. That's number one. And I wish to God I could have came up. I really would. God, we lost Diane again. Anyhow, I wish to God I could take credit for that. You know, for that quote, I can't. The second question I have. How many of these guys have to butt heads with a grandmother? I don't care if it's an African American grandmother or an Italian grandmother. In the case of Nancy Pelosi, where these guys just get their heads handed to them, right? And thank God Diane's back. We seem to be having some technical difficulties, and Diane, I'm so sorry, Dr. Di. I really am. I'm so sorry, but.
I'm not sure why I keep getting booted, but if I get the drift, Patsy, you're saying you wish they would pay for these crimes.
Well, it's twofold, and I'm kind of hitting both ends of the same spectrum. I think on one end, I really wish, and I honestly believe, you know, I believe in karma, and I believe in the yin and yang, and You and I have had these conversations for so long, and you know, for years, and we're both martial artists, and we both understand that there's a plus side and a negative side to everything, and you need both in order for things to move. But eventually, once the pendulum swings too far in one direction, it eventually has to come back the other way. It has to. That's the universe decides that there's balance, and eventually the balance is going to catch up to these guys, because they're playing a game that the universe has already decided billions and billions of times that it just doesn't work that way. So eventually everything's going to catch up to them. It's just our humanity that looks at it in a way that we're not patient enough to see these guys pay for what they've done, for karma to kick in, for the pendulum to start swinging the other way. That's one thing. The other thing is, and it's more of a human thing, why do these guys insist on butting heads with a grandmother? I don't give a shit if she's an Italian grandmother, Nancy Pelosi, or an African American grandmother, and Frank, help me out here.
Maxine
Waters, you know, two different congressional things, and think that they have a chance against either of these two women who have seen everything there is to see. You can't bullshit grandma. Nana, you can't do it. You can't bullshit her. She's seen it all. Why do these guys, you know, even older than me, think that they can do it? I'm 51 years old and I know I can't do it. Why do these guys think they can?
I think these women are playing the long game, I hope. I do think Pelosi is playing the long game.
Pelosi's right? Definitely playing the long game. I completely agree with that. She's definitely playing the long game.
And Waters has been speaking out since day one, since the election. I mean, there's just no, she's been incredibly consistent. And so they're making enemies. And, you know, I always say Lady Karma's coming. And when she arrives, they're going to be stunned because they've been getting away with it all this time. Right. And so there's that notion that sooner or later this will catch up with them. But they've made so many enemies in so many places. It's going to be some unexpected things. It's going to be more like the Al Capone thing. It's going to be the money laundering. It's going to be all the messy taxes. It's going to be the business practices and the emoluments clause. It's not going to be just Russian. And I think maybe on too focused on Mueller. Barr is lying to Congress. What will the consequences of that be? You know, there's so many questions.
Absolutely. You know, what you've brought up, it makes me think, though, that back to the playbook, and Patsy, your question, I want to keep it there. I want to not stray too far away from it so that we do get back to this about grandma and everything. But the playbook is one where if you look at them now refining their answers and responses and refining the narrative, the PR narrative around everything, Dr. Tyler, you just said, they're starting to respond to that. What they're doing is, look, it's no longer the Russian thing because they couldn't pin the Russian thing on us. Then they want to go to taxes, and there's not going to be anything about taxes because you're not allowed to see his taxes because it's a privacy matter, and all you're doing is being politically motivated about this. So then you're going to turn to something else. If you look at Mick Mulvaney's testimony, he said, you know, it's not surprising. All they're going to do is just keep turning to one thing, to another, to another, to another. When in reality, the reason why they're doing that is because you're doing things wrong in every area, in the tax area. You know, you're doing something wrong in all those areas. So, of course, we're going to turn to those things and look for what's wrong. But the way I'm trying to define it to their base is that you can't find anything in one area, so you're going after another area.
Yeah, you know, the part that kills me, Frank, is guys try to pull this bullshit with their own grandmother. You know?
Probably.
It just kills me. None of these guys, I don't care if you're Mulvaney, I don't care if you're Barr, I don't care if you're Trump, who probably had no family dynamic at all. None of these guys would try to pull this bullshit with their own grandmothers. What makes you think that you can pull it with somebody else's?
Yeah, and to that question, I want to ask Dr. Knight, you know, as a woman, and I know that your political stance is aligned with ours, but, you know, talking to other women that may be not aligned with us, do you see them taking offense to this kind of behavior with women in positions of power, or do you see them as kind of being haters and saying, well, you know, those women are being ridiculous and being petty with the guys who are just trying to do their jobs? Because it concerns me, and I'll set the question up lastly by saying this. Oftentimes when I'm doing jury trial work, I've run into women who are on juries, and they judge a woman who's in front of them very harshly. They make really kind of off the wall wild comments when I ask them after the trial why they ruled the way that they ruled. And I found that there's a strain of a lack of support amongst women for women in some cases. So I wonder, you know, what have you encountered in that regard, Dr. Dye?
Okay, so I guess that was a great setup, because that kind of sets up where I'm going to go with this. There are two groups of women. There are women who enjoy somehow being held to traditional standards, right? And they judge other women who want to break those standards very harshly. And I think that's the second group you were talking about in the setup, right? They judge these other women harshly. They vote in jury pools for odd reasons, not necessarily having to do with the parameters of the case, right? Then there's a second group of women who see this as really condescending behavior. And I guess I'm in that second group, right? And we see these men talking down to these women, and we understand that they don't respect these women. And we've experienced this, right? So we have some kind of synchronicity with what's happening to Waters and Pelosi and how they're being treated, right? And women of, I hate to say this phrase, but women of a certain age, any woman over 35 right now, right, has had this experience, right? So we're relating to it. So the women in the second group are relating to it. And the women in the first group, Frankie just captured it elegantly. They're saying, well, these women are being uppity, right? They deserve to be put down. They're bothering these men.
Let me ask you that. In fact, let me ask both of you this, because both of you raise really great points. And so I think you're probably in the best position to answer. Well, you're definitely in the best position to answer this question, but I'm going to ask it to both of you anyhow. Do you think that dynamic that you just described, do you think that's a generational thing?
My experience has been that it's not entirely generational, but older women tend to be harsher judges of younger women, and not so much vice versa. I don't see younger women worrying about the older women or judging them or anything. They're ultimately more genteel toward the older women, saying, well, maybe they just don't understand, you know, and maybe that's condescending too. But I think Madeleine Albright hit the nail on the head some years ago. I think this was like in 1995, when Hillary Clinton was speaking in front of the women's conference in Beijing, and Madeleine Albright said there's a place in, you know, a really special place in hell for women who do not help other women, and women who hurt other women in their careers or their advancement. And I think this group of women who wants to sort of keep Pelosi down or make Maxine Waters take her place, or all that anti-Hillary hate we saw because she was a woman in the 2016 campaign, all of that stems from a sort of traditionalism that's counterproductive for women as a whole. This is why we have the gender pay gap. And I'm going to leave it there, because that's a whole nother show.
Yeah, and it's something we're definitely going to have to discuss. Frank, what do you think? Do you agree with Dr. Dye?
I have to agree with her. I think that for a couple of reasons. One is, first of all, she gives the perspective that I can't. You know, she's got, yep. She's a woman, and I can't mansplain this. I mean, she's got.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay.
There's one thing we do not do is try to mansplain anything.
No, I'm not feeling oppressed, man. Take to the airwaves, my brothers.
Yeah, both of us look at it like, you know what, this is your wheelhouse. You're going to tell us what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong because we don't have a clue.
It's like the Kavanaugh hearings.
Go on, Di.
I'm just going to interject. I'm sorry, Frank. It's like the Kavanaugh hearings where women saw the way that Dr. Ford was treated, right? So they're seeing the way Pelosi and Waters are treated, these grandmothers. And they know that these grandmothers are going to come back swinging. Hopefully we're supporting them behind the scenes. That's all. I'm sorry.
No, it's perfectly fine.
I agree. And I think, I think that's the hope that, that there's a tide that's turning. And, I think that with everything that we've talked about, to the aspect that I will, kind of piggyback on what Dr. Dye said to agree with her is that, that there is a slight positive upward trend with younger generation. And that is, you see, because the younger generation, I think sees the idea that progress for women and progressiveness is not a bad thing, that dual roles or multi roles for women in today's society, that the return on that investment for society is a positive thing, as opposed to saying, we should just expect women to take these traditional roles. Whereas I think that the young women understand that women who want to select those traditional roles, that's a perfectly sensible choice to make. And they're not going to judge them harshly for that. But at the same time, they're going to support other women who are trying to be progressive and gain their place, their rightful place in the world. So,
the one thing that I will say is regardless. Frank, we're both from real traditional Italian families, and regardless of what you want to say, strong women has always been a part of our lives, right? It always is. I literally married the strongest woman I've ever met in my life, and I can say that wholeheartedly. And both of you know her, so it seems to me that and Di, you and I have had conversations like this, maybe not quite this deep, but at least on the surface, about how it always takes two, right? You can't have a submissive anything. You always have to have somebody who is the voice of reason, and you always have to have somebody who has been there and has fought that fight and did these things and whatever the reason may be. But it always takes more than one, and men always have the point of view. And I shouldn't say men all the time. I shouldn't say always men, because that's not fair. A lot of guys have the point of view that they have to be the guy, that the one that's in charge, and they can't handle not being the person that's in charge. And I think that is a big problem that we have. However,
I think we're
seeing
it.
Yeah,
we're just seeing them display that. That's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to support you there, my brother.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's sad, but it's not completely unexpected. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay.
It's sad that we have a dynamic where, I really think it's an older generation, and my generation kind of is like that, but I think if there's a kink in the armor, it's my generation. But if you look at the generation below us, if you look at my son's generation, if you look at your son's generation, you're looking at a generation of people who look at females or minorities or people different than them, let's put it that way, as, you know what, why can't this person do what I did? Why can't this person have the same opportunities I do? Because this is what they've been exposed to all their lives, and this is what they've grown up with. And to look at a female as their equal is a very natural thing for them now, or at least maybe not very natural, but more natural. Let me put it that way. And maybe it's me, because I mean, Di, you know me. I don't see a problem with that. I don't see where this is an issue. I don't understand. And I guess the only reason I see a problem with this is because you have people, yes, my age, and definitely people older than me, who don't look at the female role in the same way that we're talking about here.
I hope Lisa listens to this podcast. That was so beautiful. Like when I cut out and I came back in, everything you were saying, I just hope she listens and hears you. In any case, I think if I get the math wrong here, correct me, but I think it's a downward sloping parabolic curve, right? Generation to generation, right? So for example, maybe 20% of the generation over 60 really got the progressive ideal and really partnered with their wives and, you know, did a lot of co-parenting and so on and so forth. And then maybe in Generation X, maybe it's like 30 or 40%, you know? And then so that's our generation, right? And then after us, what's happening? It's coming closer to 50 or 60%, right? But you're never going to get rid of traditionalism. You're never going to get rid of dominionism. You're never going to get rid of patriarchy and conservatism until capitalism delivers the goods in some way that rewards effort and humanity versus like gender and all these stereotype, you know, sort of identity aspects of politics, right? If we say, well, we only want straight people in this role, or we only want women for this role, then we're kind of creating the kind of categorization that kind of keeps people down too. And so I think on the left, we have to be really careful about certain identity politics, and we have to demand equality or parity with those leaders. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it really does. And here's the thing I'll say. Oh, by the way, I should point out that unfortunately, Frank has a prior commitment and he had to leave, and I should have stopped our segment and then allowed our mid-rolls to go through before I did this, but we were on such a roll, I didn't want to do that. So Frank has, as of now, Dr. Dice, just you and I. Here's what I'll say about that, and I honestly believe what I'm telling you, and you know, you and I have known each other for a very, very long time, so you'll know if I'm bullshitting or not. I really believe that it takes two, right? And believe me when I tell you, and like I said, you've known me, and folks, trust me, you wouldn't believe me if I told you, but trust me when I tell you, if it was not for a strong wife, I'd be in big trouble, right? I really would.
Yeah.
I would be in a lot of trouble, right?
I get so, that.
And I had a strong mother. Okay.
Right.
But the thing is, I can't imagine trying to dictate to my wife what direction we should go, or what direction, you know, us as a family should go, or what. I can't imagine doing that, because holy shit, I'd have screwed things up so bad. It's unbelievable. We'd have been doing nothing but playing catch up. Right.
Yeah, and again, I think, like you said, it's kind of an interdependence, you know? I mean, that's a deep spiritual thing. Like I said, get Lisa this podcast, load it up, and send it on your anniversary. you know, because, I mean, this is all beautiful stuff. But I agree with you. I mean, I'm in a long-term partnership too, and it's always a roller coaster. Sometimes you're growing together and sometimes you're growing apart in a long-term relationship. That's just normal. But it also takes a mutual respect, right, in any long-term relationship.
Exactly.
And that goes for any generation, right? And I saw my grandfather help my grandmother make beds and do housework, and he would call her old lady in broken Italian, you know? And and he was certainly, I mean, he was a man of the early 20th century. So, I mean, it's very interesting to me that there are men in every generation who get that it's a partnership. And cultural norms have changed so that more and more men are coming to the realization that we got to work together. But I really see, like, feminism needs to enter a new era where we start talking about the way forward. You know, what is the way forward in teaching our sons and raising our sons? And what is, you know, after Me Too, right? What is the way of looking at this politics where we started today with the way that the women are being treated, even women who are in great positions of great power, right? Well, how do we look at that and view that? And then we question those norms that are keeping people down, right? And silencing voices. And that, I think, is the way forward for feminism in the future. It's not about women anymore. It's about dignity and human respect. And it's got to transcend just the gender thing so that people are getting, like, hey, all of these people, there's room for everybody here.
Right, and
that's tough. That's a tough sell.
I think it's tough for maybe our generation, and absolutely for the generation before us, or generations plural before us. But when I look at the generations or generation behind us, I look at my son, and that's really the only thing that I have to go on as far as the generation behind us, that and like some of the folks that I work with. They don't look like white is she, and I want to make a very specific point of saying she, telling me what to do. And I'm looking at it from a male point of view, right?
That's interesting.
You know, we're seeing these folks as saying, that's just a person in authority that just happens to be a female instead of a male. It really doesn't matter, right? It's that person in authority that I'm either questioning why they're questioning me, or I'm looking at them like, okay, yeah, I kind of screwed up, and at least they called me on it and they straightened me out and we can go on from there. Where the generations before us, and some of my best bosses have been female, to be honest with you, and I haven't had many.
I think that's my
generation, and it might have been the field that I grew up in, or that I have my degree in. Okay, I'm sorry, Dad. Apparently there's a time limit on segments. So I apologize. This is something I should have known ahead of time, but we spent so much time at the beginning of this bullshitting that people were never will never see or hear. But let's just pick up like this was a commercial and never happened. In fact, this is where I'll put the commercials. But
okay.
From a martial arts point of view, I've worked and I am associated with and I deal with folks from a martial arts point of view who are far higher ranked than I am. And I'm a master. And there are people who and they don't look at gender. Okay. And I can start throwing out names and I'm not going to do it. But there are people that I hold in very high regard who I think are the cream of the crop, who do not look at gender. They simply look at what you bring to the table. And they don't give a shit if you're male or female. What do you bring to the table? And these folks don't care. It's all about, are you legit or are you not? I know folks who are far, you know, can, but yet are martial arts, and we might be, you know, talking about how you're making the sausage now, but you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, totally. But those are enlightened people, right? And so,
yeah, yeah, they are.
I think it's like we're comparing sort of, you know, the common, I guess, sort of social norms against pretty enlightened social norms. And we're really lamenting that in our lifetime, it hasn't come as far as we'd like, right? And
well, sure.
And I'm particularly frustrated with it. I found myself in a locker room at the gym telling young girls to go ask for the money they wanted. And I like, these girls, I didn't even know them. They didn't know I was a professor. But I somehow told them that I had this number I had calculated. I lost around $3 million over the course of my career to the gender pay gap at different points, especially when I worked in tech. And their mouths dropped open, right? And they didn't understand that. And when I told Kevin that, he didn't understand it. So I hope, you know, these things, we close these gaps in the coming century. But every time you have a little progress, you have a little pushback. And I read a quote today by the father of Ta-Nehisi Coates. He said something like, you know you're going to get that pushback, but you got to keep fighting, right? And he's a civil rights guy. He came home from Vietnam and worked in the civil rights movement and worked with the Black Panthers and whatnot. And so he had a particular perspective about the way that we're seeing present racial strife. And I think the same is true for women. The same is true for every progressive cause that would bring people closer together, right? And it's like you said, like these enlightened martial artists see it one way and everybody else sees it another way. But gradually the culture sort of drags itself along. If you look at the way the attitude toward gay marriage changed over 20 or 30 years, it was dramatic, right? But we haven't made that much progress in feminism. We haven't made that much progress in racial relations. We've got a lot of pushback. Why? Because those kinds of dominant systems are really entrenched in our culture, right? And these guys in power are showing you on TV daily. I think that's why we're talking about them all the time, right? They're just showing you how entrenched they are, and they're hanging on for the last gasp.
Yeah, and you know what? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. When I look at, and you know, I think my biggest flaw, to be honest, is I look at things for I look at the world as a martial artist,
right?
And I think that's a big flaw in my part, because until I became involved in martial arts, I never really looked at it that way. The one thing the arts has taught me is life is not black and white. There's nothing but gray areas there, because you really have to understand what's going on in somebody's heart and soul and everything else in order to understand why they're doing what they're doing. And that in itself, people can either look at it as a hindrance or as a revelation, one or the other. I tend to look at it as a revelation. Because I think whenever you look at the world as, and you try to make everything as black and white as possible, you're doing yourself a disservice. But that being said, this idea that just because I have different parts than you do, I am the person who should be making these decisions is asinine, and it needs to be addressed. And when you look at people like, well, let me back up a little bit. I don't look, and I'm gonna throw the letters out. I'm gonna throw the initials out as when I look at
Butchered Sports, raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Has come into her own, and I look at AOC as somebody, and she is the face of a movement, and I credit Fox News for that, because they decided that she's the person we're gonna go after, and they really do not understand what's going on, because whenever you're picking out her mm-hmm. as the person that, oh yeah, we're gonna attack her, it's kind of like, hey, let's find the strongest, the mountain, and let's attack the mountain as opposed to, right?
Well,
and that's exactly what they did, and I hope they crash and burn inferno, because they don't get what's going on. She is the face of a movement and of an attitude, and I've said it from day one. Whenever this midterm happened, you saw, especially in the House, finally in my lifetime, I finally saw what as close to a true cross section of our country that we're going to get. And I sat there and I said, "Thank God," because finally we're going to have people in a position of authority who truly represents what this country is. And I really think it scared a whole lot of people. And I really think it really scared a whole lot of Fox News viewers.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I really do. And I welcomed it with open arms. I said, "Holy shit, finally, thank God. Thank God it can only happen in the House, and this is never going to happen in the Senate, because the Senate's a place where everything goes to die." But I really looked at what is in the House, and I said, "Oh, finally, thank God, we have at least a portion, a half of a third of our government who finally represents our country." And I don't give a shit if you like it or not. It is a true, or at least as close as we can get to a true representation of what is happening in our country. And I was thrilled to death. I'm sorry. I was thrilled to death. I was like, "Holy God, thank God."
I think that's a sign of things to come, right? That just explains the whole changing demographics of the United States, right? And sooner or later, the Senate will reflect that. But keep in mind, America isn't just a racial and social and cultural melting pot. It's also got this extreme wealth stratification, right?
Right.
So in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, we see immigrants aren't just like, I know the Republicans have this mythology on Fox that immigrants are universally Democrats, and mm-hmm. letting any of them in is like bad news for them politically. But that's not necessarily true, because a lot of Asian immigrants are very conservative and they vote with the Republicans. So, you know, all those stereotypes are sort of falling away, and there's a lot of very conservative Latino, Cuban population, Argentinian population, Chilean population in the United States who are not necessarily, you know, big fans of the Democrats. So I think these mythologies will begin to fall away. But I want to go back to something you said about AOC. When Fox News picked her, it's almost like karmic justice playing itself out, right?
Right.
Because
right.
Their strategy is their martial arts strategy, getting back to our common root as martial artists. Their strategy is to like cut off the head of the leader, right? And mm-hmm. and that's what they think they will do. And mm-hmm. every time they strike at her, right? She's got a very deft way. From my art in Tai Chi, she's got a very deft way of avoiding the strike, right? And redirecting it back at them. And her generation sees her as a hero. And her generation is a mirror echo, population-wise, of the baby boom. Right, the baby boomers replaced themselves, yes. And Generation X is part of that replacement generation too, in terms of our children. And so, we have an entire population wave coming up behind, you know, maybe the older.
But in any case, I think maybe we should be wrapping it up. We've gone quite a while over time. I want to thank everybody who was a part of this broadcast today. Obviously, I want to thank our co-host, Master Frank, or I'm sorry, Frank Nattel, who had to get off a little early because of prior commitments. And obviously, I want to thank Dr. Diane Bowser, who was absolutely fundamental and really brought a lot to this pod. And I cannot wait for her to join us again, because Diane's viewpoint and her opinion and how she sees all of this is so martial artsy. It is so what I'm trying to bring to this pod that it's ridiculous. It really is, folks. So I'm cutting it kind of short, and I apologize for cutting it off early, but folks, trust me when I tell you, this is the type of thing that I was hoping for. It's unfortunate that we've had a few problems as far as mechanical is concerned, as far as using the software is concerned, but I promise you we're gonna do better. Anyhow, thank you, Frank, for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Bowser, for being a part of this. And until next week, folks, goodbye and God bless. And before I finish, remember what we always say on this podcast and what we always say on our YouTube channel, whenever it's myself and Master Grant, your time is very valuable to you. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. So thank you for your time. And until we see you or talk to you again next week, goodbye and God bless and take care. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to Lessons from the Dojang with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show and want to know more, check out dojanglelessons.com and please leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Join us again next week when we discuss whatever the hell's been going on.